Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, February 14th, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. My name is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Grantham. How about yourself?
I'm just fine, as usual.
Okay, that's great.
It's called The Usual Suspects, correct? Wasn't there a movie called The Usual Suspects?
Yes, I think I might have seen that a long time ago.
Yeah, I think Kevin Spacey was in it, right?
Yeah, and a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah, there was a strange character, and I forget its name, that was in it. Characters on this show, right? What?
A lot of strange characters in a lot of strange places.
Yeah, we're always good for the laugh to start things out. So we don't have any worries about comedic flair, correct? So send up a comedic flair, right?
Okay. I'm sending one up now.
Okay, that's good. All right, so each week I'm supposed to be talking about the four planks of my political platform of the Geneva Convention bankruptcy of 1930, which is really exciting stuff, correct?
Yeah, that's why we're here, because we're very excited.
Yes, we're here because we're extremely excited. There's no pablum in our halls at all. We have stimulating topics. And having said that, the four planks of the platform our health, sovereignty, solvency, and afianchetto. Now everybody can go to sleep, correct? So the interesting part about it is that today I was going to talk more about health, and I was thinking about that because it's such an important part of the whole platform, because I always say, if you don't have your health, then you really don't have anything, really. I mean, what's the point of politics if you're not healthy? So I became a jest, correct? I was in jest.
Right.
All right, exactly. So people know that I'm raw vegan, and you're raw vegan too as well. And we think it's a very important lifestyle, we'll call it. We don't really call it a diet, because diet has the definition or the undertow of being something that's difficult and not wanted or limited. It's not going to be lasting. Like a diet, of course, a diet could mean a regimen of some kind. I guess there are different definitions for it. All right. Having said that, the raw vegan trip is really not eating any cooked food. So a lot of people say, when I say raw vegan, they hear the word vegan, but they rarely hear the word raw. Right. So they react to vegan because veganism is something that people are generally aware of these days. And veganism, for people that don't know what veganism is not eating meat or dairy. No dairy nor meat. That includes eggs, too, because we always get a kick out of the idea of how did eggs come into
the category. No animal products, or no products that come from animals or are made by animals.
Right. And then the question was, how did eggs get categorized with dairy? Remember that one?
Eggs aren't really dairy, but they're laid by a chicken. So I don't know how they got into the dairy department, but it should be like a precursor to meat or something, because a chicken will come out of the egg, as we all know.
Right. So we should specify that chicken eggs come from chickens, because there's other eggs that come from other species, correct?
There are many types of eggs in the world.
That's correct. So we apologize for inferring that all eggs come from chickens and not from cows, right?
Right. There are duck eggs, goose eggs, quail eggs, any kinds of eggs.
That's right. Quail eggs.
Deeply interested in this yucky subject.
That's right. That's right. But the interesting part is, how are chicken eggs, so we'll qualify that, And so how are chicken eggs categorized as dairy coming from a cow, right?
I don't know.
That's,
I don't know how that got coupled together, but at least in this country, I don't know how it is in Europe or other countries, they group eggs and dairy together. When you go to the supermarket, they're grouped together in that aisle in the refrigerated section where they have butter and milk and things. They also have eggs. So I really don't know why.
So I'll ask you the question since you're here. Is that in terms of the egg problem, is that a digestion issue? Because you can eat raw eggs and the enzymes would be alive. But just like meat, you could actually eat raw meat and the enzymes would be alive.
But
that
it's not vegan, It's not vegan.
Yeah, it's not vegan, but it's raw. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So, I mean, I do know people that are raw foodists that actually would eat raw eggs and meat and raw fish. Of course, with you're Japanese, you might eat sushi, or if you're not Japanese, you might eat sushi, but we wouldn't keep the rice part of it. But anyway, I said most people that are raw are really vegan as well.
Right, understood. But at the same time, that if you're raw, the issue of raw is really live enzymes. The enzyme is the real issue. I know people, there's an argument out there that say, well, enzymes are actually denatured once they hit the mouth when you eat it. And then the question comes, well, where do you get the enzymes? Because they're real necessary. And then they will pipe up and say they don't know. Now, that's not good enough for me. And so I disagree with that totally. And if people hear about that factor that enzymes are pretty much denatured once you eat them, that's completely wrong. In terms of my teachers and what I've learned in the past, that enzymes are very active once they are in the body because they only are denatured at 105 degrees temperature, but our bodies are running at 98.6. So that of itself, that particular equation would show that obviously the enzyme is still active, right? So I agree with that part of it. So that whole idea that we have the enzyme life is the issue about cooked food and the idea of the veganism, too, or raw food, actually. So you can be a raw foodist and still not be vegan and still have enzyme life, but you can be raw vegan and not eat the dairy and the meat, which is hard to digest. In terms of digestion issue, in my opinion, I mean, that point of killing life and killing animals, that's an issue too, but it's not really an issue to me regarding those spiritual aspects and all that business. I mean, I don't like the idea of killing the animals, but I still think it's, in terms of your health, it's a matter and not a moral issue. It's really the idea that it's hard to digest meat and eggs and dairy. It takes several days to digest these things. And that means it's hard on the system, it's hard on the health in terms of digestion, whereas in raw veganism, most of the food is digested in just a few hours. A banana is digested in 1 hour, all right? So that means it's just a few minutes that the body will digest the raw food, as opposed to several days of hard digestion with the dairy and the meat. So that's more of an issue with me regarding instead of moral codes and all that business. I mean, that kind of hooks into it to a certain degree because I don't like the idea of slaughtering animals like they do. It's just a pathetic system. And there is a documentary called Food Incorporated. I highly recommend people to look at that. They'll probably become vegetarian immediately once they've seen it. It's pretty awful what goes on in the meat industry. It's really terrible. And I think people really need to take a look-see to that particular film called Food Incorporated. And albeit they have the supposedly a very important factor of that yogurt company, what was Stonyfield yogurt, is supposed to be their high level of nutrition, which is ironic for that particular movie. Remember, they were making a big deal out of the yogurt and what have you. All right, so having said that, because I'm not, that's part of the dairy aspect of yogurt. But again, it just know that Food Incorporated will probably get most people off eating meat because the meat industry is pretty pathetic in terms of how they process the meat. And that gets into kind of a moral issue too, I suppose. I mean, and even the health issue regarding eating meat, even raw meat, even though the enzymes are alive, it's pretty filthy stuff in terms of how they process it, as opposed to how they used to do it a long time ago. And therefore, having said all that, I think that if people can't get off eating meat, eat it raw, and then the enzymes aren't dead. Because if you kill the enzymes, you're killing yourself. That's why I have a slogan, dead enzymes equals dead people. That's called shared straight, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I have to apologize because I'm having sort of a little bit of an issue here, technically, and I think I'm going to have to hang up and call back in 1 minute. So if you can continue out without me for 1 minute, I will be back momentarily.
All right. That's great.
All right,
I have no problem with that. I'll try to live without you for 1 minute.
Okay.
It'll be very
Thank
difficult,
you.
I assure you. She's a really terrific person. So you are hanging up? Well, you weren't supposed to hear that, so I was talking about you.
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm hanging up because I have to reconnect because there's a technical issue here.
No problem.
Okay.
We understand that. Yes, bye for now. All right, so Gabriella will return, fortunately. Fortunately for me, I really like her presence. She's a really special individual. Very bright. She's actually a degree journalist. She's a really fine writer and poet and what have you. She's a very articulate individual, very intelligent, and glib, too. She has a great glib presence, which I appreciate. Nowadays, the glib is in. Everybody's very glib. If you watch that series West Wing that was on a few years ago, they're very glib on West Wing. So glib is in, right? I think she's not there any longer because she said she was going away, but that's all right. Like we talked about, in terms of all these health issues, I really think it's important that people need to learn. I think in the next 20 or 30 years, there's going to be a lot of raw veganism because when I talk to people about it, they get very excited about the concept, albeit it's difficult to implement it in one's life. Because especially if you've been a meat eater your whole life, and it's hard to, the idea of people believe in bacteria and all that stuff in terms of eating raw meat, and I understand that. So it's actually a sort of a mental or mindset shift that people really need to understand and take time to make that shift for one's health. And when we're talking about health, I'm talking about physical health. I'm not talking about spiritual things or anything of that nature. I'm talking about longevity physically. If people want longevity physically, the best way is through the raw vegan diet. And eventually, as you get older, I think that consideration for life and death is an issue. Young people don't have to be concerned about this so much, but there are a lot of young people in their 20s and 30s that are starting to turn to raw veganism or getting the seeds of raw veganism and learning and gaining the knowledge. But again, their issues don't really happen till a man when he's in his 40s and a woman in his 50s regarding heart disease and things of this nature. Then they need to become serious about their diet regimen, in my opinion. I think it's important. But we've often said that you can do this at any time in one's life. I didn't become raw vegan until I was in my late 50s. And I think that it hasn't been difficult per se because I've been fairly healthy most of my life. I guess Gabriella is back. I'm pretty sure.
I'm back. I'm pretty sure I'm back too. Thank you.
She's back and
I apologize
front at
the
same
for the disruption.
Time. There's a front and back to Gabriella Foster. I assure you. She's not only a back, but there is a front.
That's right. I'm not a paper cutout. A paper
That's
doll.
Right. It would be very difficult to be a human and a paper cutout or a cardboard cutout without a backing of some kind. And we don't mean in money backing either, because we don't agree with that either. The backing of funds. See, people say, how can you make a a fun atmosphere out of a seemingly lugubrious salient subjects affecting our world today. I'm cheating and reading it from the episode description. Well, it's not hard to do when you're basically a comedian like I am, right? We know that.
You're never comedic. I don't understand what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, I have SD, right? So one of my dear friends that told me about several months ago about people that have SD. I said, what's that? It's a serious disease, right? Boy, I was laughing so hard at that for a while. So I've incorporated that. Serious SD, right? I coined it, the initial SD. I say, do you have SD, ma'am? What is that, sir? Do you have serious disease?
That's
what's that?
Serious. That's a serious diagnosis.
Yes, it's a very serious diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
SD, having serious disease. We don't really want to have serious disease if we can avoid it. All right. And my opinion is anybody can go raw vegan. And then people say, well, isn't it individual? And I say, well, I still think that anybody can do it. Again, maybe that could be controversial to you because I know how you're a proponent of individualism, relativity, and things of that nature. Is that correct, Gabrielle Foster?
Is it correct that anyone can do it or that I'm an individualist?
Right. Is that your opinion in terms of it's an individual choice or do you think that anybody?
Okay, I agree on both counts because, yes, anyone can do it, but whether anyone wants to do it is another story because people really love cooked food because they've been eating like that for a long time. So what's astounding to me, though, is when I talk to people who are ill and relate to them stories of people that I actually know. This is not just people that I've read about. That have cured some very serious illnesses, such as cancers and arthritis and MS and all kinds of things, diabetes and so forth, you know, they still don't want to change their diet. They'd rather go to a doctor and get medication, so they're not really ever healing the source of the disease. They're going to continue on because the source of the disease is not eating the right type of food. So that, you know, especially with something like diabetes, it's all nutrition. But it's just, you know, people can go their own way and do what they want, and that's life, you know. And yes, anybody could do it, but does anybody want to do it? Probably very few people.
Well, I've talked about it many times before about that idea of the mortality issue. And then people say, well, if we're mortal, why are you so concerned about longevity? But it's kind of a idiocy, I think in terms of giving up the ghost before you've even started, you know, that type of thing. And then what we've learned is essentially you can live indefinitely, like they do in the East. Sometimes people live to be hundreds of years old, which that's hard. People don't believe that in America or in the West. They don't believe that people can actually live to be hundreds of years old, wherein I have met people that are. And in terms of proving that up, well, there is a belief factor. You have to set some standard of belief somewhere in your life, in my opinion. But again, I really think it's the undertow of why those people don't want to change and they're ill is they know they're mortal and it's sort of like they've given up the ghost, so to speak. And I think that's the root cause of it. You just can't get to them regarding the fact that and unearth that factor of mortality because it is within everybody in terms of human being, human existence, and that becomes the issue. Now you have to talk about more woo-woo stuff and, you know, the eternal soul and life and death and all that, and they really don't want to focus on that because, they know they're mortal, so what's the point? You see what I mean? And so they kind of throw up their hands and say, yeah. And I think that's the issue. It wouldn't make sense to me. It seems logical that would be the true problem that people have of why on earth wouldn't they want to do something that would change their health. In other words, they became very ill anyway. They gained a cancer somehow. Did they do it psychologically on purpose or was it just a coincidence or a mistake or an accident, that sort of thing? or was it really kind of the undertow of they knew they were gone anyway, so what was the point? And yeah, so it's fashionable pessimism. It was the Nietzsche, Superman,
Well, you know, we've talked before about people having, you know, whether they have a strong sense of survival. So some people don't. And if they don't have a strong sense of survival, they're probably going to, you know, just go ahead and eat the way that they're continuing to eat and hope that the medication won't cure the cancer or whatever they have and not really care because maybe they don't really want to be around. Maybe they're not so happy. And, you know, it's everybody makes a decision as to what they want to do with their life, and that's the way it is. But, you know, I've met people who cure themselves of brain cancer by eating this way. So that's pretty amazing. They decided they weren't going to give in to the cancer. They would change their diet, and they had miraculous recoveries. So it's these are people I know. It's truly happened, and it's happened in lots of situations. But people have to want to do something like that. So you can't force anything upon someone. And this thing is, you know, people are saying, oh, well, if I ever get into bad health, then I'll change my diet and do that. And then the problem is when they get into bad health, then they're usually too despondent to want to change their diet. Only a few people are really willing to make that effort because for some reason they think it's more important that they can go out to restaurants all the time and eat gourmet food or whatever than to live a healthy life without it. You know, it's like, oh, my God, you know, I'd rather live for two more weeks at least and go out to dinner every night than live for 200 years or, well, 20 years or whatever, you know.
Right.
That's you know,
right.
The point that I'm trying to make.
Well, it's not like Clockwork Orange where they strap you to a bed and then ladle green smoothie or open up your eyes with toothpicks, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's incredible to me. I want to be healthy as I can be. I want to have the most energy I can have. And I don't want my health to be an issue that's going to keep me from doing things that I enjoy doing. So if I weren't raw vegan.
Right, you cut out the word enjoy doing. You do.
Enjoy
right,
doing like
enjoy.
Physical activities. Like I enjoy running. Okay, that's not everyone's cup of tea, but for those people that like any kind of outward activity, whether it's golf or tennis or hiking or taking a walk or going for a swim, you're going to feel a whole lot better if you have energy to do it. You're not dealing with health issues and pains all the time. So, and so many other things. And, you know, do you have to get a knee replacement or a hip replacement? If you eat right, you shouldn't have to do any of that stuff.
I agree. I know that the medical lobby is four square against that because they have people lined up as if it's just a normal thing to knee replacements, hip replacements, just put in metal parts into your body, which I disagree with wholeheartedly and I think is ridiculous, okay? But they do this as a normal behavior nowadays and they just act like they're really bon vivant about the whole thing and just go in and have everything replaced. But that's the prelude to cyborgism. They were doing it back in the 30s and 40s with putting the metal in the teeth. I mean, that was the first step towards cyborgism. We're making people in half machine, half human. So it was a starting over a gradual period of time. They've been doing it in the last half century, all right, or more, this gradual changing people to cyborgs. And it's just historical that way in terms of just being a normal behavior. That's what's going on. When you replace somebody with a metal part, when is it going to be on the exterior? As I was joking several months ago about, we'll have a company called Reverse Body Parts. So when you're born, you reverse all the organs on the outside. So then you have plug-and-play parts to your body. You plug in a new liver, a metal liver, and plug in a new heart. And then the heart goes bad, and you plug in a new heart. Pretty gross, right? Well, I mean, it's probably maybe 100 years away from something silly like that, I suppose. Why not? Wouldn't it be easier just to plug in a new new part, right, than to go dig into it in your body. So just reverse the whole thing at the start.
So horrendous. Jeez. Forget it.
Plug and play body parts, right? That's a new
we'll
company.
Just become head.
And
we'll just become
Blade Runner,
become
right?
Head,
yeah,
like
go ahead.
That.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, like on the Star, I think there was a Star Trek show where they were just heads. They'd evolved from the physical aspect, and they were just big heads, you know, sitting in jars or something.
They're,
I can't remember
brains.
How they...
They weren't even heads.
They were
just brains.
Oh, God, they were just brains.
Just the brain at all.
So
the brain by itself. Right. Oh, yeah, well, it's pretty silly stuff, but again, what's going on is pretty silly, too. That's just the nomenclature, vernacular of life, where they're just changing and putting in new parts. These really awful technological joints that are just so primitive. Anyway, like the knee is like some kind of silly hinge apparatus with a bolt in it. It's just really terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, you know. Years ago, they had one of the... Philadelphia Eagles was having an ankle replacement. They were showing some cartoons in the press where the springs and bolts and little screws are jumping out of it, out of the ankle, you know?
Yeah,
it's pretty funny. You know, putting bolts in your body. Like, someone is bolted up, you know, bolted up like a machine, you know, like a lawnmower or something. I mean, it's really pathetic, but they take it really serious. They all have SD in terms of, yes, we're very serious about these metal body parts, right? Gosh. I mean, is it pathetic or what? I think it's pathetic.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, well, it's a shame. It really is. That, I mean, yeah, you're prolonging life, but the quality of life is not there. And it's just,
Well, a good friend of ours admitted, who's a nutritionist, he said, when you go and dig into your body, it's never the same. We know that. There's always complications and problems. Exactly. See,
and
if you stay away from
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because they just don't know what else to do. And it's just ridiculous that it's in the thousands of years that they've been trying to heal people, the best they can come up with is cutting up body parts and burning, you know, through chemotherapy or whatever, and, you know, radiation and drugging and all that kind of stuff. It's the best they can come up with. You know, they might as well just go back to, you know, getting leeches and putting it on people. God, it's ridiculous. You know, they can't come up with anything more sophisticated than that or anything more natural. It's insane, you know, and that people, and people go to doctors thinking the doctors are gods, and you can do anything to me you want, and I'll, you know, and here's my insurance, and that'll cover the $500,000 it'll cost for me to get the operation and all the medication that I need to get. God. Which
well,
have numerous side effects.
And it's all for profit taking, too. So they got to buy a new Rolls Royce, correct?
Yeah, whatever. But it's just, you know, I mean, the pharmaceutical companies are making tons of money these. You know, they're so rich because everybody's taking all kinds of pharmaceuticals. It's just... It's just incredible. And then people go to the hospital for something and they come out and what's the disease when they in the hospital, mercy or something. What is that disease?
Yeah.
It starts with an M. And there's a disease that they get when they go to the hospital. And a lot of people get it. And it's just,
I don't mean to cut you off and be rude, but we're getting down the last few seconds.
Sorry.
So, well, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate your commentary as usual. And I want to thank everybody else that's on the show that's been listening in, the Journeyman and new people. And thank you for listening in this week. I really appreciate it. It's a great honor and privilege to disseminate the information that we do on the show. This week we talked a little bit about health. Next week we'll get more back into the political aspects of it. So, again, thank you for all being here. This is Grant and Taylor Hughes signing off this week. Have a great week, and goodbye for now. Okay. Are you there? Hello? Hello there. Hello there.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay, I didn't know.
I guess you can hear me. Is this...
we hear you.
Is Eileen, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, you actually pronounced it right. Exactly right. Eileen like a xylophone.
Okay,
no,
there you
that.
Have it. Are you from the UK?
Yep.
You sound like you're... Oh, you are, okay.
No,
like
we're from California originally.
Oh,
we're from California originally, and right now we're in Costa Rica. Yeah, we are. Yep.
Okay. So you're American,
yeah,
but you live in the UK, correct?
No, we do not live in the UK.
We live in Costa Rica.
Oh, you don't?
Yeah, we live in Costa Rica.
You live in Costa Rica. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay,
so sure.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
There's
a little bit of a delay, apparently. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, that's with every call, and I'm assuming that the Skype to Skype is probably a double delay, kind of irritating. But can you hear us fine, or is it major delays?
No, I can hear you now. That's fine.
Okay. Well, one of our biggest questions, you know, we can see the validity sovereignty certificates, and then we're wondering how do you use them? We understand saying that. We don't have a problem like that or anything right now, but we understand that if there was ever a problem about dishonoring under saying that they're insolvent and all that stuff, how does the sovereignty certificate play into the whole thing? I mean, stand it, but we really don't. Like,
how does it function?
Yeah, how does anybody believe it or
be able to use it
or understand it if they don't understand trust law? Or do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Well, that's a very good question. It comes up all the time. And we talk about that on the Sunday morning shows, too, as well. And a lot of it has to do with, hang on one second.
Yeah.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi there.
Okay, good. Okay. So, yeah, that's a very good question. And the question comes up all the time in reference to how does sovereignty fit into society and whatnot. The main point to it is that, as I often mention, is that when we're born, we have ordained sovereignty. In other words, we're, by birth itself, we're ordained sovereign, okay? And that means that's more of a political definition, if you will. At the same time, it works into the concept of our life that we talk about the birthright. And the birthright means that when you're born in this world, I often mention that there's kind of a grand compromise. When your essence is born into the world, you go to the birth canal to be human. And then by doing all that compromise by being born, do you have a birthright to have everything freely given to you, all your needs, food, shelter, and clothing? All right. And so what that means is that's ordained sovereignty. In a indirect trade society where there'd be no money, where there would be a non-monetary system, which would be the highest economic level, and where the American tribes were, even like in California especially, California, the name was one of the empresses of Lemuria in ancient times. So you being from California, you should know that. Yeah, it's very interesting. So the American tribes were using indirect trade, and they weren't using a monetary system. Okay? So that means if you're born into a non-monetary system... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm saying that we were listening to that and understanding that, and that we could see the validity of all that.
Correct. That's correct. So the important part of enacted sovereignty in our world today is because we're in a contracts law world, we're in a money world, and therefore you need that contract to show proof of your right to use the privileges, which are licenses. Licenses are lawful because it's revenue for the government. And therefore, to be able to use the... Remember how the policemen sometimes pull people over to get them tickets on the road, and the policeman will say to the operator of the vehicle, he'll say... did you know that driving is a privilege and not a right, okay? Okay, and then they don't have a distinction of what that means. In other words, you can't quiz a policeman to get it clear. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, what is the right? Yeah, they don't explain that.
Correct. The right is the birthright. We have one right. We don't have a plurality of rights. We have a plurality of privileges. See, and privileges are by the government that give you the privilege of use. And the reason why they do that, a license to breathe, license to walk, they can do all these things because that's the way that the government should get its revenue and not through taxation. You see what I mean? So having said that, in order to use that license without creating civil torts, so-called T-O-R-T-S, a tort, you have to have enacted sovereignty. Correct. Now you enact the sovereignty to now trump the license. See, now you have the enacted right to use the privilege. You see what I mean? So that's the answer to when the policeman tells you that driving is a privilege and not a right. See, but he doesn't know how you get a right because they don't have that in police science or political science. Now, these are things that Paul Simon has no idea about at all. You see, you'll get it from me. I'm the recommendivist on this. You know, I'm the source of this information where Paul has no idea what he's talking about. Okay, yeah, you should know that.
Cool. Good to know.
Well, I mean, he doesn't understand.
Yeah, really
has
a lot of information that they can.
Well, you can see I have the knowledge, you see what I mean? This is lengthy stuff. There's a lot to it. And you just don't get it overnight. I mean, he only came to a few of my shows. He was off and running with everything, sealing the documents and everything else. But it's not just him. Other people do it, too. I don't have time to sue everybody. It's a shame that happens, but there you go.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the reasons why we first started listening to your show was because you said down your little thing that you had a PhD in English common law, and we had a tort happen to us. We had some issue with defamation, and we were trying to figure out. We started learning about Uniform Commercial Code and then the common law, and the newspaper completely lost. It wasn't in any of the documents. It said, "Oh, we're quoting court documents." It didn't exist, and it was really wrong. What happened? And we didn't know if we were supposed to go into a court in common law or if we were supposed to go in a maritime court and try to say that this is a debt. First of all, I don't want to go in there and argue defamation. More defamation.
There are only UCC courts, always have been, in terms of there's really no maritime courts. Let me clear that up for you. The Admiralty Maritime Equity Law. Yeah, go ahead. If you want, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm listening.
All right.
I'm listening.
Right, I know. It's that little bit of delay. It makes it a little awkward, so I apologize.
Delay, too.
Right. What I'm saying is the international law is a Uniform Commercial Code, albeit they don't reveal that to you, okay? So they can't reveal it to you in the courtroom because they don't want to create it as precedent into the yellow books, the law books, so that now you can refer to it, and then if you refer to it now, that'll refer to the bankruptcy. So they're trying to avoid that right now. What that means is that Admiralty Maritime Equity Law, the law of the sea, is the template when they started writing the Uniform Commercial Code way back when. All right, so they misconstrue the Admiralty Maritime Equity Law into the courtrooms because they don't understand that they rewrote it. You see, they don't understand it. So when people talk about Admiralty courts, it's very foolish. They talk about constitutional courts. That's very foolish. If they talk about any other courts other than UCC courts, then it's just a foolhardy way, and they have no idea what they're talking about. You see what I mean? However, the irony is they won't reveal to you that they're UCC courts. Sometimes they'll call them statutory law, but that means that is a Section 1 of the Uniform Commercial Code statutes of the bankruptcy codes of Section 1. All right, that's what they mean by statutory law, the bankruptcy statutes of Uniform Commercial Code. But they'll never reveal that to you in toto. See what I mean? They'll only give you a little bit of it because they can't reveal it. And that's why when you're having issues, you can use the universal. I mean, the Uniform Commercial Code for remedy, you can use, there are two quotes that we use, 1-308 and 3-503, 504, and 505, but you can just use that 3-503 to make it simple. And that's a notice of dishonor. So anything, any challenges you have or anything you disagree with in the courts, you can use that notice of dishonor. We use it all the time, and it works very well. All right, now, in the UK, it's difficult, but in America, it's seemingly, we get a lot of relief with that. All right, so
and are you,
I would highly recommend, yeah, go ahead.
Saying it would you suggest saying it's because they're bankrupt, so under the statute, under the Article 1 in the UCC, it's under the bankruptcy, which it goes back to the Hague, and they're bankrupt, so they don't have the authority to act against the man or woman? Is that what the argument is, if anything happens?
Well, it's, they don't have articles.
When you're dishonoring
the UCC,
them?
It's, they have sections, so just for your aggrandizement.
Okay.
Reiterate the question. Go ahead.
That when you're saying, hey, you know, you guys don't have the authority to act, that you're going back and saying it's because you guys are in bankruptcy, and we're aware of that. You're not disclosing that to us. Because we keep listening, and then we even take notes. We'll go back and forth and listen. It's really so much. So we're assuming that at this point, with
there's
our understanding, that's the argument.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. At the same time, you've come to the right place for change. And you should be excited about
cool.
that. I'm sure you are, because we are the source of it.
Yeah,
you're fortunate that you got to it finally. You know, it was really nice to hear from you this week in the emails, and it's nice to get connected that way, because there's a lot we can do, and then you get enlightenment all the time. That's why if you get on the Sunday calls, they were a lot of fun. Gosh, we were on for 5 hours today, and I was 2 hours late.
You're
going
to have to give us the other show, too.
What's that?
You're going to have to give us the other show, too, because, well, when you gave us the number, we've been looking, because you keep mentioning that you have a Sunday show, a UK show, you call
it,
on the show.
Yeah, I gave you the number.
So we've looked
emails.
Up many times.
Did you get that?
Well, yeah, we got the phone number, but we don't know where to find the show. What show is it?
Oh, no, it's a conference call on a Sunday morning.
And
I gave
same
you the number
blog?
And the PIN number. It's my conference call line, and then there's a PIN number that you have. Okay? Did you
okay,
get that in the email?
What time does it start?
Well,
you
it starts real early
number,
on the East
like
Coast.
I said,
so
don't know where the show is.
If you're in, what time are you on in Costa Rica time? What time? I'd have to look that up. On the East Coast time, is it the same time zone?
1 hour apart. We're 1 hour earlier.
Yeah.
You're 1 hour earlier. Okay, so you're on Central time in America.
Yeah.
Okay. That means that you know, it would start really early. It would start at 6:45 your time in the morning. But you don't have to get on at that time. You can get on later if you want. But I start at 5:45 because in the UK it's at 10:45. See, so I don't want to eat too far into Sundays. But today, gosh, we did 5 hours. I mean, it's really incredible. They have a lot of staying power. The UK people are wonderful. They're on my call. It's really great. You know, it really is nice.
Nice.
So you can get on at any time during the call. And then sometimes go ahead, I'm sorry.
So no,
go ahead.
Stupid lady. Is it on Blog Talk allowed, or is it just for us to call in and listen?
Do you have a website to go to?
No, Sunday morning is interactive. Sunday morning is a conference call.
Okay.
And that's interactive.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Yeah,
totally
that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, the Blog Talk, we don't do, it's only a half-hour show, and we used to get a lot of hecklers, so we stopped taking calls. Okay.
They still don't understand the deep wisdom you're
And we didn't stop doing it. So, what's that?
So throwing some pearls before swine there, you know what I mean?
Well,
they don't
understand
the deep wisdom that you have to give them, you know?